Crowder checks the clock, gets it to Isaiah. Deep three.
What's up and welcome back to the Sneak Peek Podcast, hosted by myself, Jacob Sockett. Today, I will be joined by Kwani A. Lunis as we take a deep dive into Isaiah Thomas's iconic 2016-17 season. Thank you so much for joining us today, and without further ado, let's get right into the show. All right, so I'm joined by Kwani A. Lunis, who is the social media producer at NBC 10 Boston, and you can also catch her on the A-List podcast with A'Sherrod Blakely and Kwani A. Lunis. Thank you so much for joining me today, Kwani. I'm really excited to talk about Isaiah Thomas with you. Without further ado, I'll just hop right into the episode. So obviously, 2016-17, Isaiah was just such a joy to watch, and just so people listening kind of have an idea of what we're looking at here, he played 76 games that season. He was averaging 28.9 points a game on 46% shooting, 38% from three, and 90% from free throw. And he also got 5.9 assists per game during that season. But what I want to start with you is, like, when Isaiah Thomas in 2016-17, those Celtics come up, what is the first thing that comes to mind for you? Like, what is the sort of essence of all of that?
There are so many parts of Isaiah that stand out for that year. You have the King in the Fourth, which I'm not exactly sure where that nickname came from, but I know when I was at NBC Sports Boston at the time, we really tapped into that nickname. There were memes and social media just erupted every time he got into the game during the fourth quarter, because that's when he'd have a breakout game. Even though he'd be consistent for the first three, every fourth quarter, especially when they needed him, he was there. It got to a point where the Patriots, I remember during one of the Patriots games, I actually tweeted this, not to toot my own horn, but I remember tweeting, I think it's time for the Patriots to put Isaiah Thomas into the fourth quarter, because they definitely needed some offensive help that game. And Isaiah Thomas was the one that was willing to do it. But another more somber note to think of when you think about that season is him losing his sister and being able to still have a breakout game after all of that occurred. He ended up I can't remember how many points he had that game specifically, but the fact that he won, put himself out there and was willing to be on the floor for his teammates in a time where he should have, you know, had the chance to just go back home and be with family, he just showed that he really cared about Boston in that moment. And despite the fact that he did lose another part of his family, he saw Boston as family as well, and he was willing to do whatever he needed to keep that team together at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, when I think of that Celtics team as a whole, and especially Isaiah Thomas, like, resiliency is just the ringing theme, because they were all so, I feel like the team just went from sort of being in these late fourth quarter situations and kind of coming away with wins by being scrappy to, like, really imposing dominance over all of the teams. And obviously with Isaiah losing his sister and then returning and playing so well in that playoff series. And I think it was the same series that he lost his tooth as well, or he, like, yes, chipped it or something, like, and he still was just really willing to put it.
He embraced it. I remember that, because we also made a meme of that moment. And it was just like a circle with a little headband number four on it, and just like a black spot in the where his skin was supposed to be. And he smiled through it all.
Yeah. And that's, I feel like that is something too, that Isaiah that really sticks out to me, is he was just so charismatic to watch, like, both on the court and, like, in all his post game stuff. Like, he just really was such a great personality for the team to be around. And so, I mean, sort of in that same vein, like, that, I think that Celtics team has, like, a really sort of special, people remember them really fondly. And, like, maybe that's a little bit of nostalgia goggles, but, like, do you feel like that team sort of had, like, a special, I think it had a really, like, special energy to it. How do you feel about that, you know?
I agree with that. I think a lot of people, when they think about that Celtics team, that's the reason why, even though Isaiah Thomas is technically not in the league now, I did read that he signed with the NBA affiliate G League. Everyone, when they think about Isaiah Thomas, that's the season they think about, and they think about that passion. And not even just Boston fans, I think everyone around the league that saw him play during that season, any team that has common sense wants a player with that kind of passion. I think the biggest barrier for him was the fact that he did have that lingering hip injury that eventually was, I think, the reason why he's not playing in the league today. But he had the passion, despite not being the tallest player in the league. He had the ability to just score and figure out a way to, despite all of the odds that are against him, make an impact on that team and on that roster. So I think that's one of the teams where you look back and you're like, you know, Jaylen Brown, I think that was his inaugural year in the NBA, and everyone's looking at that roster and they're like, the passion was there. There was talent there. That was a team that everyone wanted to see go further because they weren't supposed to. That, like, that's a team where eventually there's going to be a 30 for 30 or some kind of documentary about, what if I told you this team didn't make it to the NBA finals? Because they really did, I think, have the passion wherever the talent may have lacked, so to speak. They had the passion behind it that I think could have filled the void. And I think they could have won a championship that year.
I think so too. I mean, you know, Golden State, I think, was really, really lucky and grateful that they had to play the Cavs in that finals, because I don't know if they would have had anything for the Celtics. And I agree. I feel like that team, like, they really wanted to, like, go to war for each other on the court every single night, and they would absolutely back each other up. And just like that, that was Jaylen's rookie year, and that was still when, like, Marcus and Terry were a lot younger, and obviously Terry Rozier was still with the team. And it was such a fun team to watch.
And the year before, the Celtics actually broke, I don't know if you remember, they broke that 54 game streak for the Warriors. So it's not like that Celtics team couldn't have matched up. Maybe not seven, but maybe five games, it would have been, I think, a pretty compelling series.
I agree. I it's interesting because I remember that was sort of like peak Golden State for their dynasty, and the Celtics just would go into Oracle and win games, and it's just it's crazy to think
they knew how to play up to their opponents.
Yeah, they do. So, and then just obviously hear a little bit more of the accolades, because I think it really speaks to Isaiah's willpower. He was the January Player of the Month. He won two Player of the Week awards, second team All NBA, and you know, he wound up finishing fifth in MVP voting that season, which is just kind of ridiculous. I mean, how often is it that, like, a second round player is making All NBA teams above guys like Chris Paul? You know, like, he's really just he's showing just how.
Not just second round though, last pick in that 2011 draft, which he makes sure to not let people forget it. But I just find his story to be so compelling when you look at how his time in Boston ended, getting traded for the number one pick in that same class. So he really found a way to prove everyone wrong. He was like, he had a checklist going, I think, when you look at that season.
There was an interview, I think something Chris Forsberg published for ESPN that I was reading, that had a quote from Isaiah. I think it was heading into that season. He said, I want to be an all-star, I want to be all NBA, and I want to be an MVP. And just like, he has such sheer just willpower. You can see it on the court and just the way that he plays. And it's really fascinating to watch, and also just so cool, you know, that he was able to succeed to the heights that he did.
Yeah, and the MVP conversation, I think at the beginning, a lot of people looked at him and they were like, okay, like, sure. But then it got to a point towards, I think, like January, February of that season, where people were like, oh, snap, like, we're really sleeping on him.
Yeah.
Again, he was like, you know what? I'm going to quiet out the haters and I'm going to do what I have to do. And honestly, I think he, again, going back to the potential of that team, he could have been legitimately considered for that title if it wasn't for a Russell Westbrook and James Harden-esque season. Like, you're not going to be able to compete with them, you know, at the end of the day. But he still made a name for himself that season.
The other way, Crowder, Isaiah, to the basket.
How often do you think about your socks? If you're like I used to be, not much. But I recently discovered socks that'll change the way you think about socks forever. They are called Bombas. Bombas socks are the most comfortable socks in the history of your feet. They are gonna wrap around your toes and feet and keep them so comfortable, so warm. They've got these great little sticky pads on the bottom that are gonna keep you from slipping and sliding around on your hardwood floors. I know you got a great house. You got hardwood floors everywhere. You don't wanna be slipping, sliding around on those. You can get them in really any color, any pattern, any length, any style. They are going to look fantastic. fantastic. I never got compliments on my socks before. I started wearing Bombas socks. I got like 2 compliments in a week on my socks. That's more than I had in my entire life before this. So Bombas socks are legit. And for every purchase you make, Bombas is going to donate a pair of socks to somebody in need. Buy your Bombas socks at bombas.com/breakdown today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/breakdown for 20% off. bombas.com/breakdown. He did so well for himself. And, you know, sort of jumping off of that, I have the stats. And obviously, Isaiah being 5'10", I mean, one, I remember being 16 and like that I was 16 watching this season and I'm 5'10". So I was seeing Isaiah and I was like, maybe I should like, you know, pick up a ball, work on my
head. It's not too late for me.
Yeah, exactly. And then I
also no shade to Isaiah Thomas, but I am pretty sure his numbers are padded because
absolutely. Basketball sneakers are definitely helping.
Yeah, him. He's more on the 5'6". Spectrum.
You think? Wow. Okay.
I'll give him 5'7", but okay. He's not 5'10". Definitely not 5'10".
That makes it honestly more impressive. Well, so
right. Like, why not tap into the fact that you were shorter than people expected?
Exactly. It makes it, you know, people would be more impressed. But so sort of, I wanted to look at their finishing inside of 10 feet because other three guards who were on the first and second team all NBAs were Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden. So out of those, just sort of rank in order who you think was finishing the best inside 10 feet and best to worst.
This is just based off my opinion.
Yeah, sort of. I think, yeah.
I would imagine, well, that's a tricky one. Probably in order, I would say James Harden, Westbrook, and Steph.
And then Isaiah.
I think it was the right season. What do you think?
So the Steph was actually first. He was finishing.
Okay, I was going to go with, I always go, never doubt Steph. I was going to say Steph first, but then I was like, was that the right season?
Yeah, it's never a bad idea to put Steph just first. So it was Steph, and then you were right with Harden being
okay.
Steph was at 66 and Harden was at 65.5. So I would also maybe give that to you. And then Isaiah was actually third. He was shooting 62% from inside 10 feet, and Russ was at 61, which is just crazy to think about.
Everyone's like, just so close.
Yeah, but like he's finishing at the same clip as like literal MVP Russell Westbrook.
Yes.
And Steph, like, and Russ, when he was still such a good athlete and he's still like able to get inside and find all of those ways to finish, which is just such a testament, I think, to just how good he's playing.
I'm telling you, that documentary about that season, if it's not specifically about Isaiah Thomas, it would be a crime because I think that's a season worth documenting in depth.
I think honestly, just the team, the Celtics from sort of the Isaiah, that Isaiah year and the year after both could have their own 30 for 30s. Cause that
because both of those teams were expected to make it to the NBA finals. I think obviously when you're in local media, there are a lot more green goggles because everyone's like, oh, we love this team. We're rooting for them. But I think if I try to put myself in a national lens, I think those were the two seasons where the rest of the league looked at Boston and were like, oh, this isn't the roster I'd expect to be at that level. But I think people gave them the respect where it was due in that sense.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like between the sort of like that 4-year stretch where they made 3 Eastern Conference finals, there was like sort of during those 4 years, there was not really any expectation that the Celtics would do well in the playoffs or that they would have any kind of success. And now that they've made the playoffs and, you know, had so many deep runs and had so much roster turnover, it seems like there shouldn't be an expectation for them to be making the Eastern Conference finals, but there is now. And it's just very,
because of that season,
we can thank IT for
set the bar really high.
Yeah, exactly. So then I also like to look at, just to sort of contextualize further, like how it compares, his season compares to something from, you know, another era of play. So I looked at Allen Iverson in 2001 because I thought that would be a pretty fun comparison.
Yeah, one of his idols at least.
Exactly, yeah. And AI in that season averaged 30.1 per game with 4.5 assists and about 4 rebounds. He was shooting 42% from the floor, 32 from deep, and 81 from the free throw line, which I just think is pretty interesting because, I mean, one, like 30.1 points a game in 2001 is like, he's blowing Isaiah's scoring out of the water.
Right.
Allen Iverson here. So like, I don't think that's that crazy, but what I did think was interesting is Iverson's player efficiency rating. That I don't know how much of like a stat head you are, but his PER was 24, and Isaiah in that season in 2016-17 was 26.5. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, everyone knows the AI era. So even if I wasn't a stat head, which I'm not, but like, I know what the stats mean. I'm like, that's significant. Wow. I didn't even realize that.
I mean, I think right now Nikola Jokic is on pace for like the highest PER ever in a season. That's and that's so like cool. 38.5. So he's right. only
really, you can't
he's
touch him.
Approaching like Jokic. Really crazy at 26.5. That's approaching like outlandish levels of play.
Yeah.
Which is just, I mean, any of these stats are really insane. And then something else I also want to point out, kind of jumping back to the king in the fourth thing. I think you can point out really in like, he was really crafting that legend in like December, January, and February, because I was looking at the numbers, and just in the fourth quarter alone across those 3 months, he was averaging almost 12 points a quarter. Like that's that, like,
yeah,
it's just it's really,
it's
great.
It's more interesting when you look back on it, because I think when you're in it, you're just like, oh, he's doing something cool. But then you look back and you're looking at even the state of the league now, you're like, who was doing that? Who's doing that now?
Exactly.
As consistently as he was.
Exactly. I don't think there are any players right now. I mean, obviously, like, you know, somebody like Kevin Durant, if they needed him to go off for 12 every fourth quarter, he definitely could. But
Steph is back to his usual form. He's looking great. Like,
exactly.
But it's the usual. It's not someone like, again, IT, where no one expected it.
Exactly. Nobody was looking for him to be scoring like that. And
they were just like, all right, just handle the ball and do what you have to do. And, you know, just get us to like maybe a 17. Like no one had expectations. No, probably the best when they don't have the expectations.
Absolutely. And then so I do want to bring us into the segment Biggest Blunder, which is the worst game. And I actually really struggled trying to find a bad game for IT from that season. Like his lowest point total, I think, in any of the 76 games he played was like 18. Because like even when he wasn't scoring, you know, effectively from the field, he was getting to the line. He almost always was on his off shooting nights, you know, racking up assists. But what I did find, he had a 16 or the team rather lost by 16 points to the Hawks, and Isaiah went 4 for 21 from the floor, 1 of 6 from deep for 19 points. He had 7 rebounds, 7 assists, but he also had 7 turnovers. And like, the turnovers aren't great, but honestly, like that being your worst game from a season is really impressive.
And the fact that he still had 7 boards, like that's impressive. It's just a bad shooting night. It seemed like the drive was still there.
Exactly. And I think that really is just sort of speaks to how much he wanted to impact the game in any way that he could.
If he knew it wasn't a good shooting night, he was like, all right, I'm going to get these rebounds. And then again, obviously the turnovers aren't great, but that means I can't even be mad at a bad game like that in that season.
Exactly. It's really hard.
So positive.
And then I also want to highlight he did have a 52 point game against the Heat. That was just absolutely crazy. He was shooting lights out with 58% from the floor, 69% from deep. He had 13 free throws and he hit all of them. And it was interesting because he had no assists in that game. And then immediately in the next game, the first one was on December 30th. And then on January 3rd, he comes back for 29 points on 56% shooting, 63% from three. He didn't miss a free throw in that game either. And he had 15
assists. At the line.
So I think
8 assists?
He had 15 assists.
Oh, 15. Oh, he definitely had a pep talk with himself if someone else didn't tell him.
Sure,
he said, he probably looked at that game as a failure because he didn't have any assists.
I'm sure.
In it. He cared that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What drive.
Well, I think that's going to wrap up the episode for us, but thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me be nostalgic about that season. It was a fun season to watch.
Yeah. I'm excited for the 30-30 to come out.
Yeah. Honestly, I think I should get a producer credit on it, even if I don't work there.
We'll make it happen.
Right.
All right, and that is going to do it for this week's episode of the Sneak Peek Podcast. One last thank you to Kwani for coming on and joining us today. Thank you to the listeners for coming on and listening to us. Next week, we will be taking a look at LeBron James' peak. I'm not going to give too many spoilers about that, but I think it's pretty debatable about what that peak is going to be. So be sure to tune in for that. If you want to check us out more, you can find us on Twitter with the handle @SneakPeekPod. Where you can find links to more episodes and also some clips and quotes from all of the episodes we have so far. This has been Jake Sockett. Thank you so much for listening.